Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. My name is Steve Osterhaus, and as always, I'm joined by one of those experts, Dr. Corinne Johnston, who is a family medicine physician, as well as the Chief Patient Experience Officer for the Guthrie Clinic Health System. Hello, Dr. Johnston. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thanks. You know, this podcast is always a lot of fun. And the point of it is to really bring into focus some of the relevant issues, the medical issues that people may be facing, so we can do what we can to help people who might be in need out there and give them a little bit more information, because as we know, knowledge is power.
You're right, Steve. Knowledge really is power. And day in and out, there are several areas in medicine where this has become more of a hot topic in the environment that we are post-pandemic. And I think a great example of that is something we're going to touch on today, but vaccines. Now, whether you are a parent making those choices, informed choices for your child, or you are an adult making decisions on what vaccinations you should receive given your own health care position, it's important to have that knowledge. I do it day in and out in my rooms, and I'm often taken back to what I was taught, that the Latin derivation of the word doctor is actually teacher. So as doctors, as physicians, we have to educate our patients as to the why and to the reasons that these healthcare options exist.
You know, and that brings us to our word, or in this case, words of the day, and those are skepticism and cynicism. And skepticism, if we talk about that, it involves questioning and doubting accepted facts and opinions, often requiring maybe some evidence for validation of those facts. Whereas cynicism is a general distrust of others' motives, or assuming self-interest, or perhaps deceit. So we just ask that everyone keeps those two words and definitions in mind as we sit down and have a chat with our guest today.
So, Steve, joining us today is Dr. David Pfister. Dr. Pfister is a family medicine physician and also the system chairman for primary care of the Guthrie Clinic. Dr. Pfister has been counseling patients for just a few decades, right, Dr. Pfister?
28 years this year, Corinne.
So congratulations, 28 years of being a public servant in medicine. So,
thank you.
Dave, we're happy to have you with us today, and I think we're going to jump right in with the first question of, what do you think about vaccines?
Well, as a family physician, I think that vaccines are one of the most important public health initiatives since we got clean drinking water. And the impact on preventable diseases has been measurable even within my career of the last several decades. When I was in my residency, which is the training that we go through after medical school, every time I was on call for pediatrics, we did evaluations of children for what's called sepsis, which is where we are concerned about kids having bloodborne infections. And those evaluations were pretty invasive. A lumbar puncture, putting a catheter into child's bladder, drawing blood cultures and blood counts. And we had a whole floor in our small community hospital devoted to sick kids. And as we have expanded the number of vaccines that we give children, pediatrics as a service that most community hospitals can support has really gone away, because the number of sick kids that we see that are sick enough to be in the hospital is just really almost evaporated.
You know, it does seem like there are a number of different illnesses. You know, you speak to the changes that have happened over time that have now all but gone away because of vaccines. So how important is it to have a better understanding of just how valuable those vaccines can be?
Sure. I think, you know, we have almost been victims of our own success, Steve, because what we don't have is a population of parents who have seen their children lying in bed with measles or hospitalized because they have dehydration, because they have gastroenteritis. But these viruses, they haven't gone away. It's just that we rarely see them here in the United States. Polio has been all but eradicated as far as it being a clinical illness in most of the industrialized world. But in the third world, it's still a significant problem. And just earlier this year, we had a case of full polio in an unvaccinated gentleman who lived in New York, who had traveled overseas. And every year we have outbreaks of measles that occur largely in unvaccinated communities across the United States.
Yeah. Do you think some of that, Dave, is because not only do we think of these things as just it's just a rash, right? Measles is just a rash. They'll be fine. And I don't know that we understand the breadth of what comes with that rash.
I think absolutely, because I think most people think of things like measles, like chickenpox. Mm-hmm. But even with chickenpox, you know, we had upwards of 50 children a year who would die from the chickenpox vaccine. So it's not just that itchy rash that we all got, or at least kids of my generation got, when it was going around the neighborhood. You know, it's associated with significant illness. Otherwise, we wouldn't bother vaccinating for it.
Yeah. And the piece that transfers over with that, right, is that if we can not have shingles as we're older because we don't have chickenpox, I don't know that we always, maybe that's us as providers, maybe that's patients in listening, we maybe don't explain that benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. I do find it interesting in adults how folks sort of pick and choose which vaccines they want. And I say all the time to folks that, you know, the COVID vaccine, besides being tied to some politics, suffers from lack of a good PR campaign. Whereas the shingles vaccine, when you have a TV commercial with a horrible rash and a sports star who's complaining about how bad the shingles can be, you know, people come in and they ask for that vaccine. Well, you know, only a small percentage of people actually end up having serious shingles as an adult. Not that it can't be painful, but, you know, each year we still have people in the thousands who die of influenza, something that is largely preventable, but, you know, no real public campaign behind it. No real public campaign behind COVID, but RSV, a virus which largely is the common cold for most adults. People come into my office and they tell me all the time, oh, you should be proud of me, doc. I had my RSV vaccine. Well, how about your COVID? Yeah, I don't know that I want COVID. Well, help me understand why. Well, I just don't want it. Well, that's not really a reason. That's just a statement. And so it leads to some interesting discussions.
Well, I think those discussions are happening quite a lot right now too, right? Because you've also got the time of year that we're recording this episode with the flu and with COVID, right, and people having just gotten back together and different family outings and things like that, which I think maybe increases the thought of, you know, oh, if only more people had gotten the vaccine for either of those.
Yeah, I had a family I saw posted on social media that had, you know, wanted thoughts and prayers from their community for their child who had not been vaccinated for influenza. And part of me wanted to say, we know how to prevent this. You know, your whole family has had influenza, lost work. Your child missed school, was on the couch for over a week. You were concerned about it, yet you chose not to vaccinate. This would be easy.
Why do you think we are cynical or skeptical as a society to vaccines? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think number one, as physicians and healthcare professionals, we've not always done a good job, number one, listening to our patients and understanding their concerns. Number two, I think expecting what folks can really expect from a vaccine. Most vaccines don't do a great job in the adult population actually preventing all illness. They do a very good job making sure that people don't get sick enough to end up in the hospital or die from that illness. The other thing is that, you know, people always tell me, well, I got the flu and I got the flu vaccine and I got the flu anyway. And, you know, 95% of the time, people confuse the common cold with influenza. Just last week, I had a patient who told me he had already had the flu this year. Well, number one, I know that we've just started seeing circulating influenza A. And when I asked him about his symptoms, I said, did you have a high fever? No. I said, did you have terrible headache and sore throat? No. I said, did it feel like somebody worked you over with a baseball bat? No. I said, then you didn't have the flu. You may have had a cold and called it the flu, but you didn't have the flu. So I think we don't do a good job explaining to folks what they had. And we also don't do a great job explaining to people, yeah, you might still get flu. You might still get COVID. You know, there are lots of flu strains out there. There are lots of strains of COVID. We have vaccines against the most common ones. And we have vaccines against the ones that are most likely to kill you or cause you to end up in the hospital.
You made an important note there about it may not prevent you from getting said illness, for instance, like COVID, but it could prevent the severity that would land you in the hospital. Does that come down to messaging more too, and something that we're lacking in this country about letting people know that, you know, you could still get it, but trust me, you're going to much rather be suffering with it at home than you were in the hospital?
Yeah, absolutely. We just don't do a great job at that. The other thing we don't do a great job at is helping people understand the more that we get vaccinated, the more of our citizens that we get vaccinated, the less likely they are to even be exposed to something. Yeah. And we also don't do a good job at telling people, you know, you might still get COVID, you might still get flu, but you're less likely to infect somebody else. So when you go to your local grocery store and you don't mask up because you've got that cough, you're much less likely to be significantly infective and, you know, infect the person who you pass in the vegetable aisle who might be getting chemotherapy or might be on medications that lower their immunity. So not only are you protecting yourself, but you're protecting folks around you. And oftentimes we don't think about the greater society that we may be helping when we get ourselves protected.
Yeah. And where do you think the, you know, I struggle, especially as when I was a newer physician, with the conversation with the parents who don't want to vaccinate, you know, and because you don't want to alienate, right? You don't want them not to receive care, but at the same time, you're providing guidance that's driven, right? I mean, we talk about autism and the MMR vaccine in studies that have debunked it across continents. Yeah. So where does this misinformation come from and then fester, and how do we work our way through that?
You know, I think sometimes as patients, our patients deal with what they call confirmation bias. So on the physician side, confirmation bias is where I find the problem that I think the patient has, because that's what I want to find. And when we vaccinate and patients develop an illness afterwards, just because it's human nature and we like to draw associations, we say, oh, well, that must be because of the vaccine. And vaccines can absolutely cause side effects. You know, vaccines can cause a fever. Mm-hmm. We are giving something that's going to stimulate the immune system. Part of that response is and can be a fever. Your arm might very well be sore. All of those side effects, though, are much less than the risk of the illness that we are trying to vaccinate against. But I think all too often we take the path of least resistance, because even as physicians, you know, we've not seen a lot of the illnesses that we vaccinate against. And we're lucky because of that. You know, I've never seen measles. I've never seen polio. Maybe some pertussis, which is whooping cough. But most likely, when I've seen that, it's been in adults whose immunity has waned and they get a less severe illness. So I think sometimes it's easier for us to say, oh, you're not going to vaccinate. Well, okay. The likelihood that your child's going to be sick because of what we call herd immunity is really pretty low. So we roll the dice. Like you said, we don't want to alienate patients and parents. And we let the odds play out in our favor, which we can do when huge swaths of the community are actually vaccinated.
Yeah.
My concern is, though, we are seeing increasing vaccine skepticism, and we are going to start to see recurrence of some of these illnesses.
Yeah.
Can you talk more? You mentioned herd immunity. Can you discuss that a little bit further and explain that more for the listeners?
Sure. So herd immunity actually kind of came to the forefront during the pandemic, when there was the thought that once enough people got sick with COVID, or once enough people got vaccinated, we wouldn't see it anymore. So the concept of herd immunity actually comes out of veterinary medicine, which is why we use the term herd, because it came from studies where cows were vaccinated against illness. Cows all look alike. And so it can be hard to make sure that you have vaccinated the entire herd. But if you get enough people, if you get enough animals vaccinated against any illness, then the presence of the illness in the community will be low enough so that the unvaccinated portion of that community or that herd is really unlikely to get exposed to that virus or illness that we're vaccinated against. Generally, Steve, we think that you hit 95% vaccination rates, and the circulating levels of a virus are going to be so low that that 5% that's remaining will be fine. That's largely what we see with measles. You know, we see good immunity to measles until the rate of vaccination in any community starts to drop, and then boom, measles comes back. So,
and when you talk, you know, we're talking about COVID, and which was a new thing for all of us, right? I think back to September 11th. I was a freshman in college, and I called my dad, and he was speechless. Like, the person who normally could walk me through anything didn't know what to say. And I think COVID took some of us, because in the medical community, we'd not lived through a pandemic, right? Those of us that are. So where does that, you know, a lot came up there with experts. I've read the journal articles. Like, how did we lose as a profession, to some extent, and it might just be in the vaccine field, that trust of our patients that we're looking out and we're giving them recommendations that we take ourselves?
Yeah. So I think that came from a couple areas. Number one, COVID, when it hit us really fast and really hard. And the science was changing. Our understanding was changing all the time. Mm-hmm. Because of that, things that we thought on a Monday, sometimes on a Thursday, we said, well, now we know something more, and we're going to change our recommendations. And this had to do with social distancing, you know, and staying 6 feet apart. And it had to do with masking. Unfortunately, our political environment at the time also didn't help, when we had politicians who were, I think, responding to people who, rightfully so, didn't want to be isolated. You know, that was really hard when we were in lockdown. Mm-hmm. And the science behind that was not well proven out. The whole goal was to not decrease the total burden of disease, but to just slow it down. So we slow down the impact on our hospitals. But when we have folks at the top of the political ladder who clearly were throwing skepticism at the disease process, that didn't help us at all.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, you know, if we had, you know, hopefully this doesn't happen, but do you think 10 years from now, another COVID type outbreak happens? Do you think we've learned a lot from this last time, where maybe we can avoid some of that skepticism because maybe we've been there, done that, or maybe we know how to message a little bit better, to your point earlier?
So I think if we have another pandemic in the near future, there will be enough concern because people will have seen loved ones who died in the hospital. You know, I think everybody is going to remember pictures of family members standing outside hospitals looking up at loved ones because of isolation. We know better how to deal with some of those issues, but I think the pain will be fresh enough that people may take some of the recommendations more seriously. I think we'll perhaps respond a little bit more slowly with some of the science. And that will help us also. I worry about bird flu, which if it continues to mutate, we may be in as bad a position as we were with COVID. Now, luckily, so far, there seems to be very little or no human-to-human transmission. But we have seen one case in an immunocompromised gentleman who had bird flu that we don't think was exposed by exposure to farm animals. I think, too, as medical professionals, we will have better discourse. So one of the things that Corinne and I were talking about earlier today is the difference between skepticism and cynicism. So as a physician, I am definitely a medical skeptic. Mm-hmm. When there are studies that come out, it's my role as a physician scientist to dive into the data and make sure that the analysis is correct and make sure that it applies to my patients. You know, there was definitely some discussion amongst physicians even whether ongoing COVID vaccines would be beneficial. But that skepticism is important. That's how we drive science further versus cynicism, which just says, well, the data doesn't agree with what I think, and therefore the data is wrong.
Yeah. For all the listeners, I actually worked with Dr. Pfister when I was a medical student. He's a reason that I'm at Guthrie, and I remember those discussions. They were about the old Zostavax, which was the old shingles vaccine.
Yeah.
And really hearing him tell his patients, you know, if your insurance covers it, great, but I don't want you paying $300 out of pocket for a vaccine that has, you know, a small margin of benefit. So I think it's so important to have, as I look from my patient experience cap and as a patient, as a family member, that relationship with my provider to have this discord, because they might know, my doctor might know a little bit more than me about certain things.
You know, we're all taught in our culture that we are the expert. That doesn't matter whether I'm a patient or a physician. Of course, people feel like they are in tune with their own bodies and experts about their own bodies and their own health. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I take my car into the mechanic and the mechanic says, yeah, you need new brakes, but that's not really what the noise is coming from. It was coming from the universal joint. I don't tell my mechanic, no, you're wrong. I know the sound my universal joint makes when it's going bad. It's really just the brakes. I only want you to fix the brakes. Mm-hmm. We would never think to do that. I always have my patient's best interest at heart, and I always am willing to look at the data in good scientific studies to say, yes, this applies to you and would be beneficial, or yes, this applies to you and it wouldn't be beneficial, or it doesn't apply to you. You know, this study is not even applicable. That goes with interventions. That goes with medications. It goes with vaccinations.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you brought up, you know, that someone might be immunocompromised, and mm-hmm. it just made me think of, I'm curious if some of the reason people were so wary or just maybe against getting the vaccine during the height of COVID, they just always assumed, oh, well, I don't have any comorbidities. I'm an otherwise healthy person, so I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But then that also goes against all herd immunity, right? Because then fewer people are vaccinated. So yes, maybe you yeah. will be okay, but your next door neighbor might not be.
So when we talk about things like comorbidities, that doesn't mean that you're going to get sick or not going to get sick. When we think about the likelihood of getting sick, it's all incremental. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your baseline likelihood of ending up in the hospital might be, you know, at this level, and then we add on those comorbidities, but that doesn't mean we're starting from zero. Mm-hmm. That means any of us can be sick enough to end up in the hospital. It's just whether it's more or less likely, but not zero.
Yeah.
So.
And it seems like a lot of our, go ahead, Dr. Fister.
And I was going to say, and interestingly, Steve, when I talk to patients about the newest COVID vaccine, what they usually tell me is not that they were never vaccinated. I do have, some patients who were never vaccinated. And for the most part, those are younger patients or healthier people who did okay. Most people say, well, I got the first two vaccines. I just don't want to get any more. So it's not that they had an objection to the COVID vaccine. They just don't understand the need to get updated COVID vaccines, to which my response is generally, so I just, you know, penned an order. You wanted the flu vaccine. How many flu vaccines have you gotten in your lifetime? Oh, I get it every year. Well, why do you get it every year? Well, because the flu changes every year. The COVID is the same way. Oh, really? I just thought, you know, this was just big pharma trying to get me to get more vaccines. No, it's that COVID this year is different than COVID was 4 years ago. And as that COVID virus mutates, we want to provide you with the best protection that we can. And that oftentimes, I think, turns on a light bulb for patients where they say, oh, so it's really no different than getting the flu vaccine. Nope. In my book, it's pretty much the same. You know, I get the flu vaccine largely because I have to for work, but also I don't want to miss a week of work or end up being sick. The other analogy that I draw for patients that oftentimes helps, because we talked earlier about, it doesn't necessarily prevent you from getting sick. I said, did you put on your seatbelt when you came in today? Oh, yeah, of course. Well, why did you put it on? Well, in case I get into an accident. So, you know, the seatbelt is not necessarily going to keep you from getting hurt in an accident. It's very likely that that seatbelt's going to keep you in the car or keep you from getting hurt bad enough to end up in the emergency room or having to have orthopedic surgery. So we all put on seatbelts. It's really become commonplace. We don't object to it anymore. You know, the stories about, I know so-and-so, and they were told that if they had their seatbelt on, they never would have gotten out of the car. They would have been a lot more hurt. No, we know that that's all baloney. I put on my seatbelt because if I'm in an accident, I'm less likely to die from that accident. I might still get hurt. I might still be sore the next day, just less likely to die. Same with vaccines.
And I think there's two ways we've kind of been having several paralleling conversations here, but there's the piece with our adult population that's mm-hmm. looking at, you know, I'd like to prevent severity of illness. And then there's pediatric vaccines where we can say, you know, in 40 years, we decreased preventable disease by, you know, 50% or more with vaccinations, preventable deaths, right, from disease, I should say. Sure. So I think that that piece, and maybe you and I had talked earlier, you know, there are some pieces where we monitor adverse events that parents might not know about.
Sure. So nationally, we have a system called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And anytime we give a vaccine to somebody and there is a bad event associated with that, whether it's high fever or something worse, we go into this reporting system and we report it. That's how when we had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for COVID, we found that there was a very small number of female patients specifically who were at increased risk for blood clots. Because we've got an excellent, excellent reporting system where anytime there's a bad outcome, it gets reported and that data all gets looked at. Mm-hmm. We have just received recommendation from the Food and Drug Administration that the RSV vaccine is associated with a slightly higher adverse event called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which we see with a lot of illnesses. Guillain-Barré is not uncommon in the United States. There's about 5,000 to 6,000 cases a year. It's generally more common in adults, oftentimes after a bacterial, but can be a viral infection also. The rates that we've seen with the RSV vaccine are slightly higher. So about nine out of several million doses of the RSV vaccine were associated with Guillain-Barré syndrome. So it's because we have that very good reporting system and the infrastructure behind it to review the data that we know that we need to warn people that there's a slightly higher risk. But think about it, nine cases out of several million doses of the RSV vaccine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really good reporting, really good. Something that I may never see in my practice, because, you know, in my clinical practice, I might give out a couple thousand doses of RSV vaccine and may never see it. I wouldn't be aware of it if we didn't have this really, really good reporting system, which is also why we know that things like the MMR vaccine aren't associated with autism, why we know that polio vaccine isn't associated with soft tissue tumors like has been put out there in some of the lay reporting that we've seen recently. We know it's not the case because we haven't seen the data. And we give out so many of these vaccines that if it was going to happen, we would know about it.
Yeah. And I think it's important as you talk about that and we talk about trust, you know, there are so many times where we were told, well, that's because you're taking money from Big Pharma, right? That's because Big Pharma's.
I wish.
Yeah.
And Big Pharma has never cut me a check.
Right. Me neither.
No, but you know, they used to buy us pizza, but we don't even let them in the office anymore.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, right? And we have the Sunshine Law, which shows reportable. You can look and see physicians that are accepting money from pharma. That's public data. So debunked.
Absolutely. And the thing is, too, is, you know, I said before how as a physician, I'm a skeptic. When you see another physician touting a drug, touting a procedure, and you know that they have, you know, the potential for gain from that talk, you automatically start questioning what they're reporting.
I know we're running short on time, Doctor, but I'm just curious if there's anything else that you feel is really important to any message to get out there to our listeners and viewers.
You know, what I would say is as a physician, the only thing that I take to be important is good outcomes for my patient. Medical care has changed tremendously over the last three decades. There are lots of things that we used to do that we don't do anymore because there's no proven benefit to them. Vaccines is not one of them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We're willing to sign up for surgeries. We're willing to sign up for riding on, walking on a street next to a bus, which might have a higher rate of bad outcomes.
We are willing to take supplements because some influencer on social media says, I need to take turmeric because it's an anti-inflammatory or whatever, without a single study. So when your doctor says, listen, this has been studied in 12,391 patients just like you, you can probably trust that the doctor, that the information is correct. Now, that doesn't mean that in 10 years from now, we might not say, hey, we have new information. You know, I think a great example of that is aspirin. Mm-hmm. We used to push aspirin, and for a long time, it was every man over age of 50 should be taking an adult size aspirin. Then it was, well, you know, if you have risks for heart disease, you should be taking it. Then it was a baby aspirin. But that's because we are skeptics and we are always looking at refining the data and what we tell our patients so that they can have the best outcomes.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Pfister, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. I know I learned a lot and I think everyone listening did. So we really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Well, Steve, this certainly was an informative podcast and discussion really for our listeners, and one that is occurring quite often in medicine. As physicians, we take a pledge to first do no harm. And I think as we reflect on what we talked about today, cynicism, skepticism, the reasons that vaccines exist to improve both quality and quantity of life, I'd encourage all of our listeners to talk to that person in your life that you have that trusting relationship with, like Dr. Pfister mentioned. Talk to your personal primary care physician. Engage with them around concerns you might have so you can receive that knowledge.
Yes, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Make sure that you're just getting that information that you need to make that informed decision. And if there's any information regarding things other than vaccines, and it could be anything from, you know, screenings and different ages and some nutritional facts, whatever can help you live a healthier lifestyle, you can find it all at guthrie.org/engage. And we encourage all of you to take a look, and hopefully you'll find some tips that'll help you in your daily life. All right, Dr. Johnson, it's been a blast. We'll do it again next time.
Sounds good, Steve. Take care, all.